Welcome once again to Digital Nerdage. I'm your host, Pat, and with me, as always, is Corey.
Hello.
Well, today, we're going to get into a wide variety of subjects, starting with the holy trinity of MMOs. Is it still necessary in today's game? A little bit of Doctor Who coverage with the premiere coming in just a week or so, and also, we're going to talk about our favorite video game characters. First up, we did want to talk about who we are, why we're doing this, what motivated us, and where the idea came from for this podcast. Truthfully, it was my idea. No offense, Corey.
Yeah, right.
After attending a local comic book convention, I decided that I'm watching all my friends do all these great creative things, writing comics, drawing comics, and the excitement around their creative process. And I realized I can't write and I can't draw, so how can I do this? And I decided, well, let's do some recording. Let's create a podcast about the things that I love. Obviously, Corey was a great choice because known Corey for a long time as my co-host. One person talking about comics is really, really boring.
I'm here because Pat's not creative.
Well, you got to be that guy already.
I am that guy. You know that.
I know that. Known Corey for a long time, pushing 10 years now, so... We've worked together in the past. We've done a lot of things. Worked in a video game store. So he was a great choice for this.
Long, miserable years.
Yeah, that was some pretty miserable years. You know. So, what about you, Corey? What brings you to this? What drives you for your comics and your video games and all your nerd stuff?
Well, I've been a long time nerd, a long time podcaster. Really here to be, I guess, the knowledge of the show. No offense to you, but
wow, the knowledge of the show.
Hey, somebody's got to get things right.
I think we might have to have an IQ test in here somewhere too. Are you a Mensa member? I don't think so.
Yeah, okay. Mr. University of Phoenix.
Hey, got my degree.
True story.
All right, so the holy trinity of MMOs, tank, healer, DPS. It's been there for a while. It's been the standard. Each class would have the abilities that they're supposed to have. A healer has healing abilities. A tank has abilities to make them get hit better. but they don't have the ability to do anything else. There might be some hybrid classes that have a few abilities, but they're not going to be efficient. With Guild Wars 2 coming out on the 28th, they're kind of going away from that structure. They're making everyone have a heal, everyone be able to do damage, pretty much everyone be able to tank. Corey, I know you've done a lot of research on this because you've been kind of researching whether or not to play the game. You've been on the fence. So let's hear what you have to say on the Guild Wars 2 take on the Holy Trinity.
Well, as far as Guild Wars 2 goes, there really isn't a Holy Trinity. Every profession in there, it's not your typical, you know, character class thing. One thing that really, I think, sets Guild Wars apart in that, and even in terms of creation, is the fact that regardless of what race you choose, you can be any class that you want. And from there, each class, which are called professions in this, have their own unique way of doing things. Every single profession has its own heal, and all the heals have different benefits to it. The character I plan on playing in Guild Wars 2 is a thief. The first healing ability that the thief starts out with, it uses a vanish ability. So you go stealth for a couple seconds, it gives you an instant heal, and it ups your health regen for X amount of time as well. Every profession has different stuff like that. They have different benefits, different ways of healing you, but they all do have a heal. That in itself is huge. Other games have tried to do that. If you look at the Old Republic, for example, every character had a good out-of-combat heal. So there wasn't the typical systems like buying food and water and things that had been seen in many other games before that. It just, you had a straight-up out-of-combat heal. That was huge. This takes it one step further.
Yeah, and it didn't. You didn't have to worry about, you know, inventory slots and the food taking up. Because I know in other games I definitely had like 4 or 5 slots if I wasn't going to a town anytime soon, covered in food. You know, it was in water. So, yeah, I'm definitely digging the fact that Guild Wars 2 is going away from that mechanic. They're trying to make every class or profession, I should say, able to do whatever they want and not necessarily have to rely as much on other people. Now, kind of, some people would say, oh, well, what's the point of an MMO that you don't work with other people? I say, you're going to work with them in other ways, but it's nice to be able to go and do that whole quest line and things like that and not have to worry about, you know, 4 or 5 other people and worry if they're going to do their job and hold their weight.
Well, the thing about Guild Wars 2, though, is that's actually not really what it's all about at all, because the game is all about working with other people. The point of not having it not use the Holy Trinity is you don't get pigeonholed into something. I'll use World of Warcraft as an example because it's by far the most popular MMO ever released. Absolutely. Most people are familiar with it. If you don't know what World of Warcraft is, you've probably been living under a rock for the last 7 years.
Yeah, absolutely. 11 million people at its peak. It was definitely a popular MMO. There's no question about that.
But we'll use that as an example. Let's say somebody is playing a warrior. I mean, a warrior is a pretty common, typical class among all MMOs. And even in most MMOs before that, the warriors would get stuck being the tanks. That was what the developers really designed them as. Did they have DPS options? Yeah, they could do damage, they could solo, they could do whatever. But their primary feature, their focus, what they were quote-unquote intended to do, was tank. They're supposed to be the ones taking the damage.
Absolutely.
Look at priests or clerics, depending on the game.
Well, see, now you got to be careful there because, in my opinion, clerics and priests are extremely different.
They are, but they aren't. Because in terms of an MMO world, clerics were balanced very much like priests are balanced.
Yeah, and honestly, that was my problem with them. It's always been my big deal with, especially with, expanding out on the clerics, paladins. When I think of a paladin, I think of a plate-wearing cleric. A cleric's more battle-type person. They're not... A priest is very passive, in my opinion. You know, but, you know, that's a completely different subject that we can address on another day. But, yeah, I mean, they did. Like you said, clerics and priests both got pigeonholed right into that healing class. Their abilities were geared to keep everybody else alive, everything about them. And even though, once again, they had some abilities that could do damage, they were never as good as they could be. Because they were like, well, you go heal people.
Well, and a lot of it was because it was one of the only classes that had the ability to do so. That's what happens when you restrict tanking abilities and you restrict healing abilities. Oh, well, only these 3 classes can heal, so those 3 classes are typically looked at as healers, not something else. Now, that has been tried to be rectified, and, you know, that started even back in EverQuest. If you look at the druids in EverQuest, they were the first real hybrid characters, in my opinion. There was nobody that could out-hybrid an EverQuest druid, because they could literally do everything. They could tank, they could heal, they could do damage, they could shapeshift, they could take care of themselves in basically every single way. Back in the EQ days, it was looked at as the ultimate noob class because it could do everything, so you didn't have to focus on one thing or another. Other MMOs have tried to build off that. Oh, WoW tried. Like, they put in the hybrid classes, but they're, even in their hybrids, they were still directing each class to one specific role, at least until they got to late Burning Crusade and into Wrath of the Lich King, where you start seeing hybrids come out into their own more. They could be damage dealers, they could be tanks, they could be healers, they could be whatever they wanted to be. But then you saw an imbalance in player class. You know, you saw instance queues.
Yeah, you know, people waiting
for a DPS.
Yeah, waiting for a tank forever in Cataclysm, waiting for a healer forever. And then, you know, the one of the big things that they do is They try to tune things, and they try to change things, and they try to make it so, oh, well, now we're trying to help, you know, these healer classes do DPS or be tanks, and then they forget to tune the healing part of it, too, for the people that want to stay as healers, who enjoyed being that healer. I played a paladin healer in World of Warcraft, and I loved it because it was a lot of fun, but it took a lot of management to figure it out and do it properly and not burn through every pot and mana bar and everything that you could before the tank went down because you ran out of mana. So it's, you know, and then they fixed the damage dealing and the tanking parts of it, and then it became that much harder to heal because they forgot to tune the healing. And the beginning of Cataclysm was a great example because every single healer was just screaming for mana. And it was bad. So, I mean, all these healers went, okay, well, they fixed this part of my class. I'm going to respec, and now I'm going to damage deal, or I'm going to tank. So they with that Holy Trinity, they tend to get one extreme or the other. They either forget to do something and or leave part of it behind or something like that. So I'm really stoked to see Guild Wars 2 take this. Did some of the beta, had a lot of fun with it. So, I mean, it's really going to be an interesting game to see.
Well, and here's one of the problems, too, with how the Holy Trinity works, and I hate to go back to it again, but it all falls back into World of Warcraft. It's what really put MMOs on the map, and really it's what skewed a lot of perception of MMO and really started to kill things. I will place the death of the Holy Trinity on the shoulders of World of Warcraft.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I would place the death of even the paid monthly subscription on World of Warcraft, because I think that's dying too. But once again, another subject, another day.
Yes and no. I mean, that can go a lot of different ways. But if you look at MMOs before WoW ever came out, I'll use Star Wars Galaxies as an example, because it's still one of my favorites to this day. There was so much customization to it. You could be anything and everything that you wanted to be because of all the different skill trees and all of the abilities that you could get. It had a 100% player-driven economy, and it wasn't all about just, oh, I'm going to go queue up for a battleground, or I'm going to go do these instances, or, oh, I have to complete this epic quest line. You made your fun. You found your adventures. Like, there was stuff you could do, for sure, but a lot of it was about players just going and doing stuff. It was the same thing back in EverQuest. Like, I remember back to days of EverQuest, even as a low-level character. It's like, oh, I'm going to go raid Crushbone. And I would spend 4 hours in Crushbone, which was just this little
orc town. Encampment. Yeah. I raided Crushbone like crazy, too, because I was a wood elf as well. Not a wood elf. What were they? The ones in the trees.
I was a wood elf, I think.
Was it a wood elf? I can't remember. For some reason, I was thinking it was something different, but probably getting distracted by, like, Elder Scrolls or something, who knows, which were wood elves, and I think that's why I was thinking they weren't. So, but yeah, I mean, you go hang out in the trees and then stock up, and I played a ranger there, so it was fletching and all that stuff, so sit up there and I'd sit in the trees for hours just fletching and doing things like that and having fun with that, and then go take out 200 orcs for 3 hours. In the, you know, back then the graphics weren't anything, and, you know, the quests were minimal, and I remember sitting there working for 2 hours to do one quest to find the orc Ulna. I remember that because I hated that freaking thing because the drop rate was terrible, apparently, on it. But that was one of the few quests you had. It was to collect these, like, 3 different bones from orcs. And I farmed orcs forever.
Yeah. Then you look at a game like World of Warcraft coming out, and it did a lot of great things for MMOs. It really did. But because there were so many players, it started creating an attitude. They had to start adhering to their player base. And the truth about it was their player base wasn't these hardcore gamers like it used to be. If you look at the peak of EverQuest, the peak of Star Wars Galaxies, Like, they peaked at 1.5, 1.6 million players, tops.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's... Like, WoW had that in the first week.
Yeah, and Paladins got jobbed again.
yeah, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, that's something that Corey and I both played Paladins in WoW, and we both know exactly how bad those were treated, so we'll definitely get on our soapbox on those at some point.
I'm sure.
But yeah, I mean, with what they're doing, it's definitely something different, and it's definitely a different approach. In addition, I mean, I feel like Guild Wars 2 is really trying to get back to that make your own fun type of thing by getting rid of this, by getting away from the Holy Trinity. Because they're saying, here's, you can be independent and you can find your own thing, but we want you to work with other people and we're going to give you these different things to do it. They're really doing a great job of getting away from grinding honor and things like that from player versus player. All your PvP gear is going to be aesthetic. It's all going to have the same stats for everybody. So it comes a lot down to skill.
It's 100% about skill. If you go onto the Guild Wars 2 website and watch one of their PvP videos, it's their lead PvP dev talking about their intention for it. They don't want you grinding out gear. They don't want you having the advantage because you have more time. They want to take two players and put them in there and see who's better. They want to take 20 players and put them in, see who can be a better team, see who's better at the game. You're going to have to move around. You're going to have to dodge. You're going to have to learn strategy. Like, that's the beauty of the PvP in this game. And there are so many different kinds of PvP. One of the most exciting things about it in terms of player versus player, that, at least in my opinion, is world versus world.
Versus world. It's three worlds.
What's three worlds?
But. Yeah, that's going to be exciting because it's really the comeback of world PvP, to be perfectly honest. I mean,
it's what world PvP should have been. We're talking 2-week-long battles.
Yeah, you log in and you better hope you weren't in the wrong spot when you logged out because it could be bad for you.
Well, the thing about the world versus world versus world is you basically queue up to go into it like you would like a battle in WoW. And then you enter into the giant area that is the world versus world versus world.
Yeah.
It's the same. Like, you can still queue up for like battleground style stuff. The cool thing about that, too, is you can queue up as a 5-man team and do 5-5. Or you can queue up and do just randoms for 10-10.
Yeah, I will admit that I have not done as much reading as I should have on Guild Wars 2. I was sold on it very, very early, so I didn't really do as much research as Corey, who was on the fence. You know, he had to really look at it pretty hard. And I know he just recently made that decision to play it. So I know you've consumed a lot more information on this than I have.
That's something like this I feel almost have to. I mean, don't get me wrong, I had a lot of fun with Old Republic. I had a lot of fun with Diablo 3 while I was playing them, but I almost feel like I got burned on those. Like, they had so much potential, and the game really just bottomed out on the PvP ended up being not all that good in Tor and non-existent in Diablo.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know, I feel like everyone's trying to give everything on a silver platter. I think that is where the Old Republic failed more than anything, is they tried to give everyone everything that World of Warcraft has given right away, and you just can't do it. It's not possible. World of Warcraft had a ton of time to build that stuff and do these things, but the Old Republic didn't get that option because they had to do it right away because the World of Warcraft player was expecting it. And I think that's a crying shame because BioWare is a great company. EA, not so much. But I think EA also was forcing their hand. So you've got a lot of things going on, and it's just... But you've got this standard of World of Warcraft that has given so much to their players that it's come to be expected. And I hope that Guild Wars 2 doesn't suffer that same fate, because I really The graphics on this are beautiful. The things that they're doing are great. And for them to have to, you know, basically be punished for coming after World of Warcraft, it would be a shame, because I can see the greatness of this game, but I can also see that there's going to be a lot of casual players and that will get frustrated with it, because they're going to get schooled by the people that know how to play MMOs, that know how to do these things, that learn their class, that take the time to study their class and figure out what exactly is going to work the best. Which is why the Holy Trinity worked so well, because you didn't have to learn so much. Your learning curve was very limited because, well, okay, I'm going to be a healer and I'm going to be the same type of thing for 85 levels, and now I'll be able to, okay, yep, I know that. Those are the three abilities I need to use all the time. This one I use in emergencies, blah, blah, blah. And you could get by. You might not be the greatest at your class, but you'd do what you needed to do to survive in a raid, in a five-man, in whatever. And I think that Guild Wars 2 is going to test that, and I really do hope that it sticks around and doesn't have to, you know, sell itself out, I guess would be the way to put it.
Well, the beauty of it is it's already a free-to-play game. Like, you buy the game, but there's no subscription.
Yeah, and that's... I think that's the model that's going to be going forward. So now you've once you spent the $60 in the game, what's it matter? I mean, they've got your money, they've got what they need. Yes, there's going to be a microtransaction system, but everything I'm seeing is those items are going to be purely aesthetic. They're not really going to be major stat things. They don't want you to be able to buy your way to be good at this game. The developers are very adamant about you learning and playing the game as they intend it, and in doing these things that way, and not finding shortcuts, cheating, you know, just grinding your way to goodness.
And that's exactly what it's all about. It's skill-based. And the great thing, you can start PvPing from level 1. You get through your first character tutorial, and then you can start queuing up into the PvP lobby.
Yep. And not to mention, you know, We're talking about the Trinity, but you know what? As an extension, we're talking about Guild Wars 2. I've got to bring this up because I was really super impressed with it. The character creation in Guild Wars 2 is absolutely phenomenal. I love everything you can do with that. There are, I believe, 8 questions you have to answer that do affect your storyline, that affect your abilities in subtle ways, and things like that. So I really had a ton of fun creating characters when I was playing the beta. I think I created something like 15 characters. So,
well, the cool thing about it is it gives you different options as far as, like, it starts you out with what kind of armor you're going to wear when you start out. It asks you profession-specific questions. It asks you race-specific questions. And that's huge.
Yeah, it's definitely something they're trying to make everything important in this game. From every decision you make, it is the feeling I get that everything, you know, every action will have some form of a consequence in the game.
Well, an example one of the developer videos was using, say you're an Asura. They're the little people. They're the geniuses of the world. One of the questions you're asked in the beginning was, what invention did you create as a child? Like, these are some pretty advanced things. And you're an advanced race, so you're expected to make these adventures as a kid. Well, depending on what you choose, that'll affect your quests and missions throughout the game. You could see things where, oh, this invention that I made is going terribly wrong. Now I have to go stop it. Or this was successful, and it was saving people, but it broke, and now I need to find a way to fix it. Like, you're going to see lots of things like that happening.
I believe that... I feel like I saw one of the races or professions that after one of your questions, you actually get an item. It's an aesthetic item, but I feel like something about your person changes. I think it's one of the elemental classes that you have a lantern or something on your hip that changes colors depending on your answer to the question. I could be wrong, but I swear I saw that. It's been a little while since I was playing in the beta, so
Well, they've all got stuff like that. Like, there's the difference in the changing like starting armor. Like, if you choose a thief, one of the thief-specific questions is if you're wearing a mask, if you have a hood, or if you're not wearing anything on your head. Or, no, it was a headband, excuse me.
No, there you go.
But they've all got different stuff like that. For the ranger class, your questions will depend on what pet you start out with.
Pets? That is something I hope they got right. I did not play a ranger, but pets are always an issue.
The pet system seems to be pretty good in this game. I didn't get much of a chance to play a ranger extensively, but the little bit I saw, it seems like a pretty solid pet system.
Okay.
I will not be playing a ranger because I'm just not a pet person. The same reason I wouldn't play a necromancer.
Or a hunter. Yeah, I'm on the same thing. I had a hunter, and that was the toughest grind I've ever done, and I don't think I'd ever go to another pet class. I loved ranged, though. I love ranged, and I love the bow and arrow ranged, but eh.
Well, the cool thing about that, too, is you can still be a bow and arrow ranged with half the other classes. With how all your abilities work in the game, your abilities are based on the weapons you're wielding. Every profession has X amount of abilities that they're going to learn. The abilities that are on your bar are entirely based on the weapons that you have equipped. So, say, I use Thieves as an example, because that's what I have the most experience with. Like, you start out with just a dagger. So you've got three abilities in your bar for those daggers. Two of them you start out with. As you use the weapon more, you get closer and closer to unlocking the ability. After you have those dagger ability unlocked, you permanently have those abilities for any dagger you equip. Same with pistol, short bow, sword, any of the other things.
Yeah, and even the magic is the same way. It's not necessarily, level based what you get. I believe like certain abilities you'll have to reach a certain level to be able to unlock it. But it's all use based. It's you're learning things as you're doing things, which I've always loved that type of mechanic. That's been always one of my favorite things. It's like, oh, I'm doing something, and oh, I discovered something else. That has always been really cool to me, to be able to add abilities on the fly, because you don't have to go visit your trainer to take care of this for all of them. Some of them just automatically pop right up on your bar.
Oh, and that's the nice thing too, is you can actually change your weapon sets mid-combat. So, I'm using my short bow, I'm at range, and they're getting really close, I have no idea back into range, I'm going to switch to my two daggers. It gives me a completely different ability set, but it means I'm more melee-oriented again. Like, it's really cool how that works. I'm very, very impressed with how their combat is.
Yeah, and they've done really cool things with the world events too, the drop in and earn silver pieces from this just by jumping in and killing a couple monsters. So,
well, they borrowed a good mechanic from Warhammer.
Yep,
because Warhammer had the public quests, and it's the same kind of concept. You get contribution points for the quests that are like that.
Yep, and actually, that was my favorite mechanic out of Warhammer. I played that one to begin with, and those were the things that I was like, man, this almost makes me want to stay in this game.
Yeah, they didn't have enough good public quests, though.
Right, exactly, and that's why it wasn't enough to stay. It was fun. It was like, oh, hey, I don't need a group to get this decent gear. I can just drop in with 10 other people that are already doing it, not group up, and just, oh, there we go. I got my contribution. I hit a roll. Oh, there we go. More stuff for me. So it's really cool because you're not, a lot of times the problem with quests, and especially like heroic quests, as the term was dubbed with World of Warcraft, you had to sit there and you had to wait for five people. Or three people, or four people, whatever you needed. And a lot of times you could sit there and wait for hours and hours or days trying to get somebody to do a quest with you because, well, I already did it, so why should I help you? And I think that kind of negates this, because there's always something in it for everybody. If you're not supposed to be there, you know, you even if you're just running through a low-level area, you still get something for your time.
Right.
You know, and that's a great thing, just to be able to say, oh, wait, I can help these people, I can do this. Oh, I don't have to, whatever. Yeah, it's a great choice to have, because I think a lot of people forget the social aspect of it, and we all get caught up in our own little worlds. We all get caught up in our own little guilds or anything, and anybody outside of that world, we don't really care about. And I think that's something Guild Wars is really getting away from, especially considering that they're doing the whole world does the PvP. You know, no matter what you do, if you're in that world versus world zone, you're working for everybody on your server, so...
Well, and that's a cool thing, too, because the points that you control, the more that you do in the world versus world, gives buffs to everybody on your server. So it's a server benefit for working together.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's definitely something we've lost. I definitely saw that in Star Wars, that people just, you know, just, it was hard to get people to do anything with you if they didn't already know you. And I'm really looking forward to this, because I really think that this game will cure that to at least some degree.
It's a lot of the big reason why I'm going to put my opinion on it of I don't believe the Holy Trinity is necessary anymore. And really, I just don't believe that it can work anymore. Not in an MMO environment.
No, I absolutely agree with that. The Holy Trinity has run its course. I think even about that, you know, it's nice, because... Now, really, people don't, even though it was easier to learn a specific task before, I think now even it's even a little bit easier, because you don't really even have to learn that task. You know that you've got the things to just take care of yourself, and if you don't ever want to play with other people, that's fine. You don't really have to. You can do the things you want to do as you are. So it's really kind of, you know, the Holy Trinity just, it's a dated idea, and I think that ArenaNet has really gone through it and taking a step forward with MMOs. I think this may become the gold standard. I think that this definitely has the ability, because they're forward thinking. They're not just sitting there going, "Oh, okay, let's just keep following the same pattern." Yeah, eventually we're gonna find a time where that somebody needs to find something new, and I think they hit it. I really think that the Holy Trinity is dead, and we're moving into a new generation of MMOs.
I think we almost had to, because, again, I think World of Warcraft kind of killed things. It changed the way people look at the game, the way people perceive it. There was a lot of talk about this with our guild and the Old Republic. The way people look at games like this has really changed. People don't know how to make their own fun anymore. And because of that, people look at a class that maybe would have been designed specifically for tanking and can't understand why tanking is all that they can do or all they should be doing.
Yeah. I really think that I really think that World of Warcraft, with their new expansion, just they jumped the shark so bad that people are really hungry for something different. The fact, the Kung Fu Panda aspect of Mist of Pandaria isn't what really killed me. It's the non-combat pets are now combat pets, but they're really just kind of Pokemon. That was the thing that I just like. Okay, you've hit a point that you have just completely negated your even remote hardcore people, because you're even using obscure lore. And that was the thing that always drove people to World of Warcraft, was the lore. So,
yep.
I definitely think that they found the way to really make people hungry for something different. And Star Wars made the mistake of kind of trying to emulate WoW instead of trying to find their own path. I think they had some great things that they did. But I think Guild Wars 2 is definitely the one that is blazing the new trail. And it has found the new pattern that people will try to emulate.
Star Wars definitely had the best leveling game I've ever played. Like, my leveling experience in that game was better than any other MMO I could ever even imagine.
Well, the absolutely. Problem
is they had nothing to end game.
Right. The leveling was great because of the amount of story that they had built into it. I've never seen. I mean, they had, what, 10,000 lines of dialogue or something? It was just an insane amount of spoken word in that game. Yeah, and I mean, you're right. The leveling was great. I had tons of fun learning the story of my class. But, yeah, you got to the end game and you're sitting there going, now what? And I think that's where you need to make sure that you're available. And I think just having the world versus world versus world will make that a non-issue, because as long as you're at least close to a time where you're going to be in the war, you're going to be happy and you're going to be ready to go in Guild Wars 2.
Mm-hmm.
So. That
final opinion.
The Holy Trinity is dead.
No longer needed.
Yeah. All right. We will take a short break here and we will get ready for our next segment. We'll be back in just a minute. All right, we're back, and, you know, we wanted to talk about our favorite video game characters. We've both played games pretty much all of our lives, and we've gone through a lot of different characters that we've seen, and this is a hot-button topic for everybody. Everybody has their own favorite. Everyone has a reason for their own favorite, but we wanted to kind of talk to you guys about ours. Probably for me, the person, and it's... It's kind of an odd reason that I like this character so much. It is Samus Aran. Besides the fact that she is a badass bounty hunter, I think the shock value from the original Metroid, seeing the suit off of her and being in the Zero suit, and finding out that, wait, this awesome character that just ran through an alien world and blew up a giant brain was a chick? Wait, what? I mean, I'm like 10 years old at this point. It stuck with me. It really did. It changed something about the way I view video games. I'm like, you went with a girl. And at that point, no girls played games. You know, there were, but they were so few and far between that you just didn't realize it. So I think, you know, Samus being this amazing character and being this awesome lead really kind of resonated with me, and that shock just kind of cemented her there forever. I know Corey has a couple, is warring with himself about who he feels is his favorite.
Yeah, something like that.
Well, who are the contenders?
All right, well, from, I guess, kind of the sentimental value, the first game that really cemented me as a gamer, I mean, I'd played games for quite a while before that, but the one that really cemented me was Final Fantasy VII. When I first bought my PlayStation 1, I was 13 years old. It was the first game I got because it just looked awesome. But the thing about it is, it's not one of the main characters that really stuck with me. The character that always stuck with me was actually Zack. I mean, in Final Fantasy VII, it would, the actual game itself, you really didn't even know much about the character. There was a little bit more about him in the Japanese version, as I later found out. But if you really dug into the game, you started learning more information about him. You started seeing, you know, he's the reason that Cloud got to where he was. He was Cloud's best friend, but he was such a mystery. Like, what was there about him? And, like, that really got me thinking. Like, that... almost afraid to admit it, but that's almost something that got me started as a writer, too. Like, I start out writing possibilities of what his story could have been, what it was like with him and his parents, because in the game they touched on that. You know, later they finally came out with Crisis Core, which, granted, the game system was a little weird, but it was still a lot of fun. It was cool getting to see, really, Zack's story, what pushed him forward in Soldier, what made him the person that he was, how he made Cloud into the character that he was. Yeah. But he's a character that, just because of that, always stuck with me. I think it was the mystery behind him that really, really made him stand out. That, and, you know, nobody else really thought anything of him. Like, he was in the game, nobody really cared about it, he wasn't a main plot point. and then like you see him pop up later in a old PS1 and Arcade Fighter Air Guys. He was an alternate character. It was basically just a reskinned version of Cloud.
Right, which, you know, even in the game, he was pretty much the same. I mean, they always were. They were pretty much the same. The hairstyles were a little bit different, but
yeah,
but pretty much the same type of person, same type of build and things. Well, build on those guys.
And then when we finally get answers about him when it comes to Crisis Core, when it comes to Advent Children. Like, that was just... He has a lot of sentimental value for me. The other character would have to be Phoenix Wright.
Objection.
Exactly. The Phoenix Wright series is kind of an unusual series. He's really not the typical character I would think I would like. But the Phoenix Wright games themselves have been just so incredible. They're really thought-provoking. They really keep you on your A-game. And it just... He's a character that was always really nice to see that he succeeded because he didn't give up. Not necessarily because he was the smartest, because he certainly wasn't. But he was able to admit that he needed help from his friends. He was able to see the things that a lot of people have a hard time with. That, hell, I have a hard time with. I hate asking for help.
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan of that character, too. I loved the games. I really had fun with them. You know, in that same vein, I guess another person that another character that I'm really fond of, and it was Professor Layton, who is somewhat of a newer character, even though I think he's been out quite a bit longer in Japan than he has in the U.S., but it's again that he's a lot smarter than Phoenix Wright in the general sense, but you know, he again sees patterns. He's not willing to accept things as they are. He wants to find truth in it. So,
well, and Layton has such a tragic past too.
I guess I haven't seen some of the past stuff. I think I've only played the third game. I don't think I haven't done the fourth one yet.
I'm pretty sure it was the third one that actually revealed a lot of his past.
Okay, and I will say I haven't actually finished the third game either. That's the Underwhelmed Future, I believe, is the one I'm on. You know, so it's definitely... there's definitely a lot of debate on favorite video game character. Because it's really... It's the one that kind of really got you going, and I think everyone has that one character that they just really found that resonated with them, that they saw themselves in, that they saw things that they maybe wish they could be, and that really brought them into it. Because, I mean, there's honestly a lot of other characters that I really like. You know, big fan of Cecil from Final Fantasy IV. You know, Link has always been a great character. But I think it's just you find that one that hits that spot in your heart, in your gut, that really just takes you to a new place, and you're able to identify with that character. So I think, you know, that's where I think that's why so many people are passionate about their favorite video game character. Why when you see topics like this come up, you get so much rage if people are, especially if you're ranking characters. You know, and I think ranking is always a tough thing to do, because it really does. It has something special in certain people's hearts, and they're going to get angry if you didn't like their character as much as they did.
I can agree with that. I think that's been where ranking is very dangerous. I mean, even with this, picking out a favorite character, like, I can't imagine just narrowing down to one character. Like, there's a lot of characters that have stuck out for me. Like, those two, yes, I can narrow it down to those two, but hell, I think there's more I would even put up there, too.
Oh, yeah, and I think there's never... You can never really go enough. I think it's... I think when you really break down into it, I think the favorite you really need to find is probably that first one that really... Like you said, cemented you as a gamer. Really just it didn't just cement you as a gamer. It spawned other things for you too. So that really gets you it gets you somewhere different that you're not necessarily gonna just, I don't know, kind of finding that special place and really getting that feeling that you can never really get away from, and that person, that character will always have that special spot for you.
Agreed.
So, you know, send us your favorite video game characters. Let us know who it is that you really cemented you as a gamer. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/digitalnerdage, or you can at digitalnerdage on Twitter, and let us know exactly who we are or who your favorite character is and why. And you can even yell at us and tell us how dumb our characters are. You know, we welcome all comments.
We may even feature you on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. When we come back, I think we're going to do a versus segment here and really see who's going to win in this week's fight. So stay tuned.
And we're back.
Sorry, coming back from the break and just absolutely in the middle of a fit of giggles. I don't know what just happened there.
You never do.
I really don't. I fly by the seat of my pants pretty much all the time. I don't know how this thing actually gets put together. So, right now we're going to discuss this week's versus. Who would win in a fight between Phoenix Wright and Professor Layton? You know, these are two more of an intellectual fight than an actual physical fight, but we're going to break this down a little different than we did last time. We've actually come up with some things we want to sort of grade them on and go through. First being weapon of choice for either one. Now obviously neither one truly uses a weapon per se, but they absolutely have some, you know, weapons in their repertoire. Now, Corey, what would we pick for Phoenix's weapon?
His weapon of choice would be the law.
Absolutely.
He is put in for a certain set of rules, but it comes down to whether you are right or wrong. It's about the truth. So, I really feel that his weapon of choice would be a law book and a firm objection.
You just wanted to throw that in because you had that as your notification ringtone for so long. And by contrast, I would say that Professor Layton's a weapon of choice would be pure logic. He's extraordinarily analytical. He sees patterns. He sees these things. And he's able to process them in a way that, you know, not necessarily everybody can. So, you know, having those patterns and things like that, using logic in relation to what's going on, is absolutely would be his weapon of choice, in my opinion. As for those two, I mean, you're looking at two very similar yet extremely different things. Because the law doesn't necessarily follow logic. I know there's plenty of illogical laws out there, but it has a foundation in logic.
In terms of weapon of choice, given the fact that they are both very intellectual, I would be inclined to call that one a draw.
I would too. I really can't see any edge to either side, so... why don't we move on to the next subject and we'll look at sidekicks or companions. I know Professor Layton has Luke, his wonderful young prodigy, who quite often is kind of an idiot, in my opinion. he's extremely, he's smart, but I feel he's almost a little bit of a liability because Professor Layton kind of has to teach him all the time. He's always learning, and that's a great thing. But I think when it comes down to a situation like we're describing, a battle between these two minds, I think Luke would almost be more of a liability than he would be an asset, because he would, you know, he may not know exactly what he's supposed to do, and Professor Layton would have to stop and teach him.
Luke does see logic in things. Like, he is a very good side character. But I'm sorry, you're not going to win the companion category versus Phoenix Wright. You've got Mai with him for the majority of the series. You've got Gumshoe. You've got Edgeworth. All of his closest friends, the people that are always there, that are always bailing him out, that are always bringing logic to the table, bringing the new answers, bringing the other insight that he's not seen.
The investigations, the information that they offer.
In terms of companions, Phoenix has the clear advantage.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that, because he does. They add so much to him without him needing to give back to them. I absolutely agree that the companion absolutely goes to Phoenix Wright. Our third thing we want to look at is their X factor. What is that thing that they have that no one else has? The quality that makes them kind of who they are, and that thing that they're going to pull out when they're in the most desperate need of it. I think I may know where Corey will go with Phoenix, but let's hear what he has to say.
Insurmountable determination. Phoenix goes back to his basic origin of why he even became an attorney. Look back to him as a kid when Edgeworth saved him from this stupid little school trial over somebody stealing lunch money. From that point forward, he never gave up on his goal. He promised that for the rest of his life, he was going to defend those that couldn't defend themselves. Phoenix never gives up. That is his X factor right there. He will fight until it's won.
Absolutely. As for Layton, I think his X factor is almost his skepticism. Layton never takes anything at face value. No matter how much evidence there is to support that something may be, he still has to really confirm it with his own abilities and his own mind. You know, thinking at the beginning of Unwound Future, he literally sees like somebody go back in time, and he himself goes back in time and forward in time. And he sees these things, and he sees an older Luke, and he sees this Luke has information that only Luke would have, and things like that. And he still isn't sold on it completely. He has these items there that are showing this, and he just can't. He still can't accept it. So I think his skepticism and his quest for his own truth is what his X factor would be. That being said, I really think that, I hate to say it, but determination may take over. May take the crown on that one, though. I think that's a lot closer race than the companion race, but I would consider Phoenix Wright kind of a pit bull. When he gets his teeth in, he doesn't let go.
And being that Phoenix is my guy, I'm not going to argue with that, but... I would have to agree there. Layton has a lot of good qualities, and there happens to be a game coming out about these two working together, which, while that's going to be incredible, and they're both going to contribute their own, if we're looking at a battle of versus here, I think Phoenix has a pretty clear-cut advantage.
No, maybe I was incorrect, but I actually thought that was a game about them actually versing each other. I thought it was Layton on the opposite side from Phoenix.
That's what it starts as.
Oh, okay. And it evolves from there. Okay, that's... It seemed kind of weird to do it completely as them against each other. But, yeah, I mean, with how we broke this down, I absolutely think Phoenix Wright would win this, just in the way, with his support team and just that never quit attitude, that never give up attitude, he'd probably absolutely come out on top, just because, you know, even though Leighton's my guy, and I do truly think he'd win a lot of fights, I think this one might be the one that he takes him down, just because he might not be willing to accept what he should accept in time for Phoenix to not kick his ass.
Maybe if I can get the Deadliest Warrior guys to respond to my emails, we can get their computer technology, find out for real.
Yeah, that'd be the way. Those guys are great, and hopefully they respond soon, because I'm really, really kind of wish I had a computer program to fix this. Alright, and now it's time to talk about the Doctor. If you don't know who the Doctor is, I think we may have some problems. Even I who...
This is the wrong podcast.
Yeah, even I who have just finally started watching Doctor Who, after everyone has made incessant fun of me, knew who the Doctor was and what the reference was when that reference was made, so... We wanted to talk about this because Doctor Who is actually returning. He is returning September 8th?
First,
excuse me. Yeah, the first. At 9 p.m. on BBC America. Set your DVRs, because I have a feeling this may be an amazing, amazing season.
There's no maybe about it.
You know, and... We've all got our favorite Doctor. Like I said, I just started. So I am on 9. I am on Eccleston.
Eccleston.
I always want to add a T in there. And I mean, the first episode I watched just the other day, and I was just floored. I mean, I'm dying for more time to watch more episodes, because it's just, it was so amazing. And just to find out the things about him, it has been a joy. Corey has been a fan of the Doctor for quite a long time. He's one of the people that was the most relentless about making fun of me for not having watched it. So, and I know you have seen 9, 10, and 11, and 11 is Matt Smith is taking this season as well. So, what have we seen, and what can we expect to see this season, and what have you seen or heard or anything about that?
Well, there's going to be a lot of really good stuff. You're going to see in this season, there's going to be companion change. They announced that a while ago. You're going to see Amy Pond and Rory finally go their own way, get away from the Doctor. We'll see how that plays out. You're going to see a lot of good action. They've got a good writing team on for the season still, and Matt Smith has just been slowly taking my heart.
Bow ties are sexy.
Bow ties are cool. I was really, really hesitant when I first started watching the Matt Smith stuff. He had a lot to live up to with Tennant. Tennant is still, in a lot of ways, my favorite Doctor. I'll put him maybe on the same level as Tom Baker, because Baker is amazing. But you've got to watch the old Doctor Who stuff to understand.
Yeah, and I'll get back to that once I catch up on the current Doctor Who stuff.
But watching Matt Smith's evolution as the Doctor, I think it's been the most interesting. I think it's the one that's really changed the most throughout his day as the Doctor. He started out as really kind of indifferent. He didn't really know what direction he was taking with it, and I think that was really apparent. But as you saw him become more comfortable in the character, you really saw his character grow. You saw his relationship with his companions grow. I think it was just the most interesting transition. I love Amy and Rory as companions. They're way better than Martha, Donna ever were. Not quite up to Rose, in my opinion, or Sarah Jane, two of the best companions ever.
I really am liking Rose. She's so innocent, almost. She's got that tenderness and that just wide-eyed innocence of having absolutely no idea what's going on, to be, but she still knows that this is an adventure to end all adventures, and she's taking it in. I mean, I just watched the when they came home for the first time, and it ended up being a year after instead of a day after. I am kind of finding a little humor in the fact that in 5 episodes he screwed up the date like 3 times already. So that's pretty funny.
That happens a lot.
So I mean, it's in just seeing this, and I can see exactly what people were telling me that this is just a fun show to watch. It's really amazing, and it's not so sci-fi that it becomes crazy. I mean, the thing is you know, you get a lot of shows that they try to be so science fiction-y that they end up not hitting the mark. They end up doing too much, and they screw things up, and they try to too much sensationalism or anything like that, that they end up just ruining the show and jumping the shark a little too early and turning people off. Now, granted, I've only watched a few episodes, but, I mean, everyone I talk to, I believe in this run, it is now season 7 for the current run of Doctor Who that's yes. starting on Saturday. So, I mean, there's just been a lot of... You don't get 7 seasons by screwing up. So I'm really stoked to see this. I'm trying my darndest to catch up as quickly as I can so that I can, you know, be current with everybody and watch this premiere. I do not expect that I will be able to watch, you know, 6 seasons of Doctor Who in the next 2 weeks, but I will be trying my hardest to at least get into the Matt Smith era.
You won't regret it, I promise.
No, and I've seen that already, so it's definitely... I think there's definitely a lot of things out there that... And there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of references that people don't catch about the Doctor. Actually was reading the Gutters, a webcomic, the other day, and it was written by one of the artists, or excuse me, not written, but drawn by one of the artists from locally here in Traverse City, Ryan Lee, and he, it was all about a girl at a Comic-Con. And, like, it had this whole thing, this breakdown, and then there was, like, a card to send in to take care of, to teach you how to be like this girl. And after name, the first question was, which doctor? Then the next question was, which companion? So, I mean, and it went on for a couple different references, and it even said, if you don't know what the first question meant, don't send this in. So, I mean, the references are out there. It's definitely got a... I don't want to say a cult following. I always feel like a cult following has... It's such a... I don't know. To me, it has a weird connotation to it. But it's just a very good following of people who really try to promote it as best they can. And apparently, Corey is killing his keyboard while we're talking.
No, that's the microwave in my kitchen. I apologize.
Oh, the microwave. Stop cooking food.
Eh, well.
We don't need food. We're podcasters. We need water and Red Bull and Cheesy Poofs.
I've got my cheese and some Mountain Dew. Does that count?
Close enough. I mean, what is it now? Probably Monster and yeah, what kind of food would be the food of choice right now? I don't know. But
I don't know.
But yeah, I mean, honestly, Doctor Who, it's really, and here's the funny part, it's British. Like, how good is British TV?
Awesome.
By extension, you know, you look at Doctor Who, which they haven't changed at all. They're giving you the actual British, you know, version of this. But I mean, some of the most popular shows on TV right now were British spin-offs or British or American remakes of British TV. The Office is British. There's another one. I believe it's another NBC show, or maybe it got canceled, but I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there that they try to remake over here. Some of it doesn't translate, but honestly, if you really watch it, it's all brilliant. So,
very much so. There's just a lot of good British television out there. There's a lot of good comedies. There's stuff like The IT Crowd.
Oh, thank you. That's what I was trying to think of. NBC is doing a pilot for that this year, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm undecided on the American version so far.
Yeah, I have not watched that. And the bad part is, I have my degree in IT, and I still haven't watched it. So, but I've also for the past 2 years been doing school and have a 2-year-old. So, crazy things go on.
The IT Crowd is a very funny show. I recommend it to anybody. Snuffbox is a really good one. There's quite a few others. Just take a look at them. You'll find them.
Yeah, they're definitely out there. And you know, if you know anything that you like that we should be talking about, you know, we're more than happy to listen to that. Heck, you know, we can even have you as a guest on the show. We want this to be your podcast as much as ours.
Email us, tweet us, put stuff on the Facebook, do whatever. Make fun of Pat. I do it all the time.
We do. It's pretty brutal. He's very, very mean to me, and I cry a lot.
Yeah, like anyone's surprised by that.
No one's surprised by that. So, well, I think that's about going to do it this week. We've covered a lot of stuff, and I hope everybody enjoyed it. Big thank you goes out, as usual, to Dano and at danomusic.com for the music you hear during the podcast. Corey's girlfriend, Tara, fiance Tara, she actually designed our logo that we've gotten some great compliments on. And I thank her very profusely. We thank every one of you that has taken the time to sit and listen to us in the past week and a half. Keep the feedback coming. It can only make us better. We really want to keep this going, and we want you guys to be a part of it. So thank you so much for everything all the comments you've made to us already, and keep them coming. Corey, any last thank yous or anything you wanted to put out there?
Not really.
he's such a man of few words. You wouldn't notice it.
Keep listening to me. Yeah. I got nothing.
Yeah. And we're going to come up with a very catchy sign-off one of these days, but it is late, and I'm tired, and I don't feel like thinking of one tonight.
Digital Nerd, staying with you more than your overly attached girlfriend.
You mean like the one that follows you to the bathroom?
Something like that.
Yeah. Those are crazy girlfriends. We've all had one. Well, thank you once again for listening to Digital News. We will be back before you know it.